This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lynn, Shaoning and Julian. Now, it is 7:36 in the morning, Tuesday the 26th of November. And in about half an hour, we're going to be having The Breakfast Grill, where Julian, you'll be speaking with Marcus Swanepoel, CEO and co-founder of Luno.
That's right. Luno is a cryptocurrency company that was originated from the UK, and they are also one of the three companies that have been approved by the Securities Commission to operate a digital asset exchange, one of the three. I think there were about 30 over companies, almost 30 companies applying for this. Only three got licensing, and Luno is being one of them. And of course, people are just this on the tip of everybody's tongue, right? Where is Bitcoin going to go? It's a very volatile sort of a cryptocurrency, and there are a lot of policy and political implications behind the trading of cryptocurrencies, and I'm going to have that conversation with Marcus.
All right, well, that's happening after the 8 o'clock news. Be sure to stay tuned. In the meantime, we are taking a look at Hong Kong this morning because they held their local elections over the weekend and it saw an unprecedented landslide win for pro-democracy candidates. So of the 452 seats contested, nearly 90% went to pro-democracy contestants. Pro-Beijing politicians only managed to keep the remaining roughly 10%. There was also a record turnout of 71% of the registered voters.
Yeah, the city's chief executive, Carrie Lam, had long insisted that the government had a silent majority in Hong Kong. But she has now come out to say that her government respects the election's results and listens humbly to the public. China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi, however, insisted that whatever happens, Hong Kong is always a part of China and that the protesters will ultimately be unsuccessful in jeopardizing the city.
Interesting that Carrie Lam's statement sounds eerily like the kind of statements that came out from Pratan Harapan leaders after Tanjung Pi.
I think there's like a SOP when you lose elections.
Yeah, there's a format, a script that governments share with each other. Yeah. So for some insights this morning, we turn to Rona Mitter, director of the University of Oxford China Centre, for insight into the situation over in Hong Kong. Thank you very much for joining us, Rona. Now, the elections have largely been seen as a referendum on Hong Kong's future direction. What were your key takeaways from the results?
I think the results will be giving the Hong Kong authorities, and particularly Chief Executive Carrie Lam, a great deal of pause for thought. And in fact, this morning she has in fact stated that she is going to be, in her own words, humble about considering the result. There was a lot of received opinion that although most people expected the Democratic parties to do quite well, that there might be a split, that people who were more concerned with bringing down the level of violence, particularly these often quite terrifying scenes such as subway stations being burned down, that those sorts of voters might decide to vote for the pro-Beijing parties to bring peace to the streets. But in fact, of course, there's been an absolute landslide for the pro-democratic parties. And that does mean that the tenor of politics is likely to have to change. So the question now comes as to what can reasonably be negotiated in the context that Beijing is obviously keen to make sure that Hong Kong does not obtain rights that are too separate from those that it expected to put forward when it arranged the one country, two system back in the 1980s.
And do you think that given these results, will the protests subside or escalate further?
I think actually these results are more than likely to lead to a subsiding of the protests. The reason being that many of the protesters who spoke out about why they were taking extreme action, including destruction of property, was that they felt a sense of despair. They felt a sense that there was really no political solution left that they could actually put forward. Now that there has been a very clear statement that there is the possibility of using the ballot box to indicate the need for significant reform and change, I would be surprised if, at least in the short term, this didn't move attention away from the streets and back to the democratic arena.
And Carrie Lam has said that her government will respect the election results. Now, what is the way likely forward for her and her government, in your view?
I think in the case of Carrie Lam specifically, she has already been sending out signals, not officially, but certainly through news media, that she doesn't seem to think that she can hold on much longer as the chief executive. She hasn't said that, but much about her body language and the phrases she's used suggests that she thinks that her own time is probably coming to a close and she would step down at some point. But I think that would be unlikely to happen until Beijing had decided who was going to take over. And I think in the light of these election results, what is now going to have to be considered is if there is any public figure who can be seen as essentially able both to bridge the democratic demands of the Hong Kong electorate, which has now been made extremely clear by these results, but also be able to talk in a meaningful and creative way to Beijing about what is the best way forward and not simply get back into the confrontation that we've seen over the last few months.
So, Rana, you mentioned that it's unlikely Carrie Lam will leave her post before a successor is identified. Has there been any sort of indications as to who that might be, though?
There's currently, as far as one can see, no absolute consensus by any means on who would take over from Carrie Lam. The fact is that becoming chief executive of Hong Kong is a pretty difficult job because you have both to respond to the democratic wishes of the wider population in the city and also be able to talk meaningfully to Beijing. And that's a difficult bridge to cross. Some people have talked about John Zhang, who was essentially the runner-up in the closed election, which was took part amongst a small committee of Beijing-appointed notables in Hong Kong, which brought Carrie Lam to power a few years ago. So it's possible that he might be brought in on the grounds that his reputation in Hong Kong and public opinion polls seems to be somewhat higher than hers. But the fact is that whoever takes over, and it could be, you know, for someone from a wide range of backgrounds, it's a very difficult task to take on at this stage.
And Beijing also has not really intervened since the protests began. Do you think that it's likely that's likely to change now?
I think it's unlikely that Beijing is going to make any more very explicit interventions in Hong Kong. In some senses, you could regard China's behavior over the last few months as both being in some ways quite assertive, the statements being making it very, very clear that if necessary, they would step in on the streets to end the what they term the rioting, which they see there. On the other hand, it is worth noting that so far, China has not taken the ultimate sort of action, such as sending in PLA, People's Liberation Army troops, onto the streets of Hong Kong, which I think would be seen as a pretty much a final act. So in that sense, Beijing, I think, is likely to stick to its current policy of talking very tough, trying to make sure that the status quo in practice is not disrupted too much, and using the Hong Kong authorities as the gateway through which change is made, rather than seeming to intervene directly from Beijing.
Well, thank you very much, Rana. And that was Rana Mitter at the University of Oxford China Centre. Interesting that his thoughts are on Beijing's direction, because as he put it, he sees them continuing to talk tough, but nevertheless maintain the status quo and essentially use the Hong Kong government as their vehicle through which to address the protests. So they don't want to be seen intervening directly, because there are about 5,000 members of the PLA permanently stationed in Hong Kong. But their mandate is basically only to intervene in extreme situations or in disaster mitigation.
Well, right? They came out to clean up the garbage, actually, after the recent protests, and then they quietly...
And that was a very extreme situation,
yeah,
I'm sure.
And then they went back to their camps.
Yeah, I think it was also very interesting that Rona talked about the protests subsiding, which mm-hmm. I thought was very interesting and quite in contrary to what I guess many of my friends in Hong Kong are expecting for the elections to signal escalating protests over there. But he mentioned that this is a good time for the protesters or whatever that represent the protesters, because they are, after all, leaderless, for the protesters to have some kind of a negotiation with Beijing as to how Beijing can give them what they want, right? Because if you look at the five demands of the protesters, it's largely based on freeing the protesters and also have direct elections of leaders who are going to make decisions on their behalf. I'm not sure if this is necessarily challenging the sovereignty of Beijing, although Beijing might not share the same view as
they
me.
Probably don't. Yeah. But the interesting, I think the first test case would probably be on December the 8th, because the Civil Human Rights Front is organising probably one of the largest rallies. So we'll see how many people turn up and where whether it is a peaceful one, like when it first started, right, in March. And that probably will send a signal as to maybe how protests will continue going forward. The other thing, of course, is what surprised me is the reaction of the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, because actually it closed at 1.5% last night. And so, you know, some of the fund managers were saying that because the results were such that the pro-democracy camp won, they would actually, the Hong Kong Chinese government will be forced to kind of make some concessions and maybe perhaps respect the rule of law, which is important because that's how come Hong Kong became the financial hub of Asia.
And perhaps it was also some anticipation heading into the Alibaba IPO, because Alibaba starts trading actually in Hong Kong today.
And interesting, this thing about Alibaba, because they bought the South China Morning Post from Robert Kwok a couple of years ago, but they have been extremely fair in the reporting of protesters. And you also find instances of them sort of rooting for the protesters. So a very interesting reporting by the South China Morning Post. And kudos to them for the great reporting.
So it still remains to be seen what's going to happen now that the voting is over, and what other recourse do protesters have? Will they eventually come to the negotiation table? All that remains to be seen. But right now we're heading into a few messages, and after that we'll be speaking with Oh Yee Sun, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, on PKR's ongoing Cold War. So keep it here for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.